Let's begin with a beautiful vart on the parsha, Parshas Vayigash. Pose a simple yet powerful question asked by Rav Shimon Schwab, Zecher Tzadok Livracha, who asks the following. And these words are perhaps not his exactly, but the idea that he presents is this. If you look at the very last few psukim in last week's parasha, Parshas Miketz, Yehuda is so submissive to Yosef. He's so apologetic. He is so humble. He says, Manu mar ladoni, what can we say to my master? Manu daber, manu tzadok, we can't justify our actions. God has found the sin of your servants. Hinenu avadim ladoni. We are now your slaves. Yehuda just essentially pleads guilty, submits entirely to Yosef. We have sinned. We are your slaves. He is, I like to say, the meek man of Miketz. Just submits entirely, pleads guilty. We have nothing to say, no defense. We are your servants. And yet, in the span of what we read as just a few psukim, all of a sudden, beginning of Vayigash, this meek man of Miketz is transformed into a fearless, fierce fighter. Kamocha kefaro, you are like Paro, he tells Yosef. Rashi says, Imtakniteni, if you anger me, aharog oscha v'saltenecha, I'll kill you both, right here, right now. I'll take you down if you don't step down. What is going on here? A second ago, he's pleading guilty. We're your servants. We have sinned. We can't defend ourselves. We can't justify our actions. And all of a sudden, this sudden transformation, Vayigash Elav, he confronts Yosef, ready for war, ready to do battle with the second most powerful man in the country, ready to kill the king on the spot. Where did this come from? How did this sudden and remarkable transformation transpire in the course of one conversation? What happened here? And so if Schwab cites a beautiful pshat from Rav Yosef Leib Bloch of Telz, who said as follows. He said, because Yehuda was the individual who assumed responsibility. He told Yaakov, Anochi e'ervenu, I will guarantee Binyamin's safe return. Miyodi tevakshenu, I'm the one who has to answer to you. He committed, he pledged to be responsible for Binyamin's safe return. And the moment that Yosef said to him, in the last pasuk of last week's parasha, no, he will be my servant, you go home in peace, that did it. That was it. This man is prepared to lay it all down, to do battle to the end, because I'm responsible. I have a mission I was charged with by my father to bring this boy back safely home. If you start with me, I will kill you on the spot. I will stop at nothing to ensure that I live up to my responsibility, because Yehuda was a man on a mission. And when someone has that sense of responsibility, that sense of mission, you can summon heretofore unseen and unimaginable kochos in your avodas Hashem as well. In your avodas Hashem as well. It's a beautiful muster when someone has responsibility, feels a sense of purpose, a sense of mission, then you can draw on untapped reservoirs of strength. And like I said, that applies to us as Ovdei Hashem. Another example, another illustration. In this week's parasha also, beautiful thoughts of the Sfas Emes. Chazal tell us, Oilanu miyom hadin, Oilanu miyom atochecha. The day of rebuke, the day of judgment, woe is to us. Because the brothers of Yosef, say Chazal, could not utter a word in response when Yosef revealed his identity to his brothers. Nivhalu mipanav. They were horrified. They were shocked into silence, stunned into silence. They couldn't say a word. The Sfas Emes has a fascinating pshat on what the shock, what the stunning surprise was for the brothers of Yosef. But to preface what the Sfas Emes says, let's first pose another question. Rashi tells us that when Yosef reveals himself to his brothers, he tells them, Geshu na elai vayigashu, come closer. Why come closer? Rashi says, he wanted to comfort them by showing them that he was mahul, that he was circumcised. That's somewhat puzzling. Was that proof that he was who he says he is because he was circumcised? If anything, as Rav Schwab points out, in last week's parasha, when the Egyptians approached Paro begging for food during the years of famine, and Paro tells them, go to Yosef, whatever he says you should do, Rashi says, what was Yosef requesting of them? Circumcision, Mila. And Paro says, just do it. Do what he says. Got to listen to him. So by this time, all Egyptians are circumcised. So what's Yosef trying to prove? Somewhat puzzling.
Are they all, out of it?
Irrelevant. If they're all circumcised, what is Yosef trying to prove? What's he proving?
That he knows about Mila, no?
What does that prove? How does that prove his identity? If everyone has that feature, that's not proof of who he is. Another question, just as puzzling. Yosef says to his brothers, after all, you see, kifi hamedaber aleichem, that it is my mouth speaking to you. What do you mean, fi hamedaber aleichem? Rashi says, I'm speaking to you b'lashon HaKodesh. Ramban asks, what kind of proof is that? Lashon HaKodesh was the language of Canaan. You think only Yaakov and his sons spoke Lashon HaKodesh? It was the Lashon of Eretz Canaan. Mitzrayim borders Canaan. You think there was no one in Mitzrayim who spoke the language of Canaan? Neighboring countries? What does that prove, that he speaks Lashon HaKodesh? So there's some other message here. When Yosef tries to show his brothers that he was circumcised, Yosef tries to show his brothers, I'm speaking Lashon HaKodesh. What's really being communicated here? So Sfas Emes has the following beautiful pshat. Sasema says, you know why the brothers were nivhalu mipanav? You know why they were so stunned? And you know what perhaps Yosef was showing them when he said, I am mahul? And perhaps, as Rav Schwab points out, what he was trying to communicate by showing them that he's speaking Lashon HaKodesh? It wasn't just the physical fact that he had a mila. It wasn't just that I know the language of Lashon HaKodesh. It was that bris mila and the way one speaks in Lashon HaKodesh symbolize and represent someone's lifestyle of kedusha. After all, bris mila is representative of and symbolic of a person's ability to be mekadesh himself, to abstain from the indulgence in taiva of arayos. Yosef, by showing his brothers, I'm talking Lashon HaKodesh. Lashon HaKodesh, as Rav Schwab says, the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim tells us is called Lashon HaKodesh because there are no direct references to Makom Ha'erva, to those parts of the body that relate to Arayos. It's a Lashon that speaks in euphemisms. Lashon HaKodesh, Rav Schwab suggests, represents Kedusha in one's lifestyle, and the Bris Mila certainly represents one's ability to live a lifestyle of Kedusha. What was Yosef showing the brothers? I am still that same Jew living with Kedusha, even here in Mitzrayim. Why were the brothers stunned? Where did they go to look for him, the Medrash says, when they came down to Mitzrayim for the first time to get their food? They split up, the Medrash tells us. And the Medrash says, in last week's parasha, they split up when they entered Mitzrayim. They entered through different border crossings. They each signed their name, the Medrash says, when they entered. Yosef gets the reports that, oh, Reuben ben Yaakov showed up here. Yehuda ben Yaakov showed up there. Lev ben Yaakov showed up here. And then he waits, and for 3 days, they don't come to his palace. And Yosef's wondering, where'd they go? He sends out, the Medrash says, soldiers to search for them. And they discover the brothers of Yaakov, where? In the Shukshel Zonos, in the houses of prostitution. What were they doing there? The answer the Medrash says is, they were looking for Yosef. And they figured, where would a young, handsome, 17-year-old boy end up? Away from his family for so many years in Mitzrayim, which was the capital of immorality of the world at that time. They figured there's no chance that he managed to maintain a lifestyle of Kedusha once he has been disconnected from Beis Yaakov. There's no chance he's anywhere else other than a Beis Zonos, a Shukshel Zonos. What does Yosef show them? Bris Milah, Lashon HaKodesh. I have maintained that same level of Kedusha here in this immorality capital of Mitzrayim. And they were shocked. They were stunned. Nifhala mipanav. Why? Says Vasem, it's because they underestimated his Kedusha. They couldn't believe. They couldn't believe that he maintained that Kedusha. As Vasem says, La'asid lavo, aylanu miyom hadin, aylanu miyom atochecha. We're going to see that there was Kedusha all around us. How could we have missed those opportunities to find Kedusha in our lives? The brothers underestimated Yosef's ability to maintain a lifestyle of Kedusha in Mitzrayim. We too, Aylanam Yamadin, Aylanam Yamatachecha. All around us, there's so many nisyonos. There's internet, there are smartphones, there is uncensored shmutz wherever you want to find it, it's available. But there's so much Kedusha that we can tap into. We have that capacity, we have those kochos, we have that ability. And Aylanam Yamadin, Aylanam Yamatachecha, says Fasemes, the same way the brothers underestimated Yosef's ability to maintain his lifestyle of Kedusha, we have that same ability to maintain that lifestyle of Kedusha ourselves and never to underestimate our ability to live and to find Kedusha in this Olam Hazah around us. And the reason why this, I think this connects to Schwab's Vort is because how was Yosef capable of maintaining his Kedusha in Mitzrayim? Notice something fascinating. When Yosef reveals his identity to his brothers, in the span of four psukim, you have one theme repeated three times. Listen to these psukim. Yosef says, don't be upset or angry that you've sold me here. Kilamichya shlachani Elokim lefnechem. God sent me to provide you with food. Two psukim later, vayishlacheni Elokim lefnechem. God sent me here. Basum lachem she'eris ba'aretz, to give you the ability to survive here in the land. And the next pasuk, v'atem v'ata lo atem shlachtem osihena ki ha'alokim. You haven't sent me here, God has sent me here. What does he say three times in the span of four sentences? God has sent me, God has sent me, God has sent me. Yosef was living in Mitzrayim with that sense of shlichus. I'm here on a mission. I have a purpose. When a person lives with purpose, a person lives with a sense of mission, a person lives with a sense of responsibility, then yes, there can be nisyonos everywhere you look, but I'm here for a reason. Don't be derailed. Don't be distracted. I'm here for a purpose. I've got to accomplish. I've got to accomplish. I've got to stay focused. There could be an Nisayon here, an Nisayon there, an Nisayon everywhere, every day, but I have to stay focused because I'm here. I'm on a mission. A man on a mission. Vayishlacheni Elokim. Shlachani Elokim. God has sent me here for a purpose. Rav Moshe Scherer Zatzal, who was one of the foremost leaders of Klal Yisrael in the past century, man who headed the Agudas Yisrael for decades and did so much for Klal Yisrael. He would wake up every morning at 5 a.m. and write out a list of his objectives for that day. And then he would daven for Hatzlacha, for those objectives to be achieved that day. In other words, every single day began with objectives, mission, responsibility. This is what I'm here for. And then daven to achieve, daven to achieve. Can you imagine if we began every day with that kind of perspective? I'm here on a shlichus. I'm here because I need to accomplish A, B, C, X, Y, Z. Today my goal is to learn this half amud of Gemara. Today my goal is to daven shacharis with kavana. Today my goal is to learn night seder, an hour. Today my goal is to do this maisa chesed with somebody else. Whatever your mission is per day, but there's got to be an objective each and every day. And then live that day with a shlichus. Live that day with a mission. You know, Adin Steinsaltz, Zichron Levracha, I'm sure you've heard of, perhaps haven't read up much about, was a Baal Tshuva in his teenage years, self-made Baal Tshuva. That itself is, if I stopped right there, remarkable. Kol HaKavod. Anyone who grows up in an irreligious family and on his own finds frumkeit and becomes a Talmud Chacham, Ben Torah, Incredible. But this man single-handedly translated and explained all of Shas.
Who is this?
Rabbi Adin Steinsaltz. He didn't have an editorial team working with him. Okay, you guys do that mesechta. I'll work on this mesechta. You handle that mesechta. This man single-handedly translated and explained all of Shas. Translation in Hebrew. Ha'aras on the bottom. He researched the linguistic derivations of every word. This is a Greek-based word. This is a Latin-based word. An incredible amount of research and work. He then translated some mesechtas from Talmud Yerushalmi. And in addition to that, published about a dozen or so other books. How did the man accomplish this? He said he once went to Lubavitcher Rebbe, and he said to the Rebbe, I have so many things on my plate. Which of these should I give up for the moment just to make it all manageable? The Rebbe said, keep it all, take on more. What does that mean? That wasn't the question. The answer is, when you're living with a mission in mind, you're here for a purpose to accomplish, to teach Torah, to learn Torah, then you can tap into these superhuman, seemingly reservoirs of strength heretofore unacknowledged, unrecognized, unnoticed. Living on a mission, living with a shlichus. I had a fellow in my shul who grew up in Bnei Brak, in a Bnei Brak suburb, the neighborhood of Bnei Brak. His older brother, like he did, went to a somewhat more Haredi yeshiva high school. But his family background was a little bit less Haredi. And when he graduated high school, his father wanted him to go serve in Sahal. And his Rebbe in yeshiva was adamantly opposed. Adamantly opposed. This is probably 1980s or so. Early 80s, perhaps. And so, for whatever reason, the father and son decided to go to the Stipler Gaon in Bnei Brak. What to do? And the way the fellow told over the story to his brother, who then shared it with me, was that the Stipler, after listening to the father, listening to the son, told the son you could go to the army, but remember you're on a mission. So you're going with the shlichus. This fellow's father, who was a very well-to-do, wealthy businessman, had connections in the army, got his son into the Air Force, which is like the elite of the elite. But the Air Force also, certainly back in the 1980s, had far fewer frum soldiers than the average infantry unit. He was stationed in a Air Force base, and when he came onto base, so the Rav HaBasis, the army-appointed Rav of the base, sees a religious yeshiva graduate coming to the Air Force base. He says to him, I'm sorry, but you can't assume that food cooked in the kitchen is kosher. So what are you talking about? You're the mashgiach here, you're the Rav here, what are you talking about? So the Rav, Rav Gluskinos, told him, unfortunately, every night, the irreligious soldiers have free reign in the kitchen, and they cook their non-kosher food in the kitchen pots and kitchen utensils, and I keep on calling Rav Livanon from the army to come down and kosher the kitchen, but I can't do this every day. It just doesn't work. It's just not shayach. I can't keep up with it. So I can't guarantee that the stuff cooked in the kitchen is kosher. So this young boy started cooking his own food, like off a little room off the shul on the army base. And the commander gets wind of what's happening. He says, you can't have your own little private cooking kitchen operation here. Shuts it down. So the kid refuses to eat food cooked in the kitchen. He eats fresh fruit and vegetables. And after some time, just he becomes so weakened, he just faints one day. Commander hears what happened again. Here's the problem. He allows him to open up his own, once again, cooking operation in the back little room off the shul there. And over time, his private cooking operation and his private little studios of Shabbos and Yontif start attracting some following amongst the other soldiers in the base. And again, the commander gets a little annoyed. You know, what is this, a separate breakaway here? Cafeteria? And when he's told that I just can't eat the food cooked in the kitchen because of the non-kosher food being cooked there at night, the commander finally agreed to lock the kitchen up at night, arrange for these irreligious soldiers to have their own little cooking area wherever they wanted to cook, somewhere outside of the kitchen, and finally made the kitchen entirely kosher for this young man to be able to eat kosher food. Which means that you have one high school graduate coming into an army base in the Israeli Air Force who single-handedly succeeded in bringing about a complete transformation of the kashrus observance on an army base because he was living life on a mission. When you go in with a sense of shlichus, sense of responsibility, sense of commitment, sense of shlichus, you can accomplish things that you would have thought otherwise to be really unattainable. And that is true for every one of us on a daily basis, living life with a sense of mission, a sense of shlichus. I have goals, I have objectives. What do I seek to accomplish? Daven for atzlacha, like of Moshe Scherer, every morning. This is what I want to accomplish. This is what I need to attain. This is what I'm working towards. Siyata d'shmaya is critical, is key. So is tefillah, to receive that siyata d'shmaya. When you live life with that sense of mission, you can accomplish seemingly heretofore unimaginable attainments.